I was beginning to play around with film in a really naive way. And I didn't really feel comfortable doing English because I wasn't writing myself. And I didn't want... I looked around me at the other students and they're all trying to write the definitive essay on Yeats or Eliot or somebody. And I thought, oh, fuck, I don't want to do this. I want to be Yeats. I want to be the guy who makes it, not the guy who writes about it. So I quit. And about that, I started playing around with film, mostly on my own. I'd seen a few films around. I'd seen a Brakhage film, I'd seen some Bruce Conner films, so I knew that there was that kind of filmmaking existed, that what's called experimental film. And then one day I heard that there's this place called Intermedia that had a bit of film equipment and that you could just go and work in. And so I went down and I timidly walked through the door and nobody stopped me and looked around and there was Johnny Neon playing with these neon tubes, or fluorescent tubes. And I walked up to another floor, and I think it was Kenny Ryan had some very complex electronic machines. He was trying to measure auras or something like that, something very esoteric. And Al Neal was playing, and Helen Goodwin was dancing. And I thought, this is a great place. So I just moved in, and nobody said boo to me. They just didn't ask me my qualifications, anything like that. And just began working there in what was, I guess, the film area. We had a projector and a pair of rewinds and a tape recorder. And integrated myself into the group eventually and started working with the group and putting on shows that we were doing at the Vancouver Art Gallery.
I remember film showings too, right? That was that I saw Bunuel's Shane Dorr and, you know, Godard films and stuff like that in the Intermedia building. I guess it was the third floor? Was the second,
yeah.
Third floor?
Well, Rizzutis, Al Rizzutis had just come up from California.
Was he a draft dodger?
Yeah. And he brought films up from California and showed them at Intermedia. So that's how the first real showings got started, of sort of current avant-garde films. It had been possible before to see the classic Dada Surrealist films at UBC and Vancouver Film Club, I think it was called. But Rizzutis bought the more contemporary stuff. And so that I realized that there was something going on there in cinema that interested me much more than English. Know, as a trade or as something to do.
So did he have? Did Rizzutis actually own copies of these films?
No, he rented them.
No, he rented them. So he knew where to rent them.
Yeah, he knew where to rent them.
So what? I mean, where was he coming from? Was he a filmmaker?
He was coming from science, really. He'd studied, I think, chemistry and physics and things like that in the States and probably in L.A. and got disillusioned with everything, and particularly with the war in Vietnam, and had come up to see what he could do up here.
So he wasn't necessarily making films.
Well, he was making films too. Yeah, he was. We were both kind of about the same point in our filmmaking careers.
Development.
Both trying to figure out what to do, and both quite naively, I think, exploring the possibilities of film. And I say naively as a positive thing. And because I always say I'm very fortunate that I didn't go to art school or didn't go to film school, because I was able to go in and make things which people would have told me were impossible to make, you know, out of this blessed naivety,
mm-hmm,
really.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And that's something that has continued to influence me or affect me from the intermediate days, the idea that I can do anything I want. In film, there's no rules, there's no theory, there's nothing. I can do everything, and I have the confidence to do everything from those intermediate days.
Right.
Because intermediate was really my art school, since I didn't go to art school. Spending 4 or 5 years working with intermediate people taught me all I needed to know at that point about art and art making. It was exciting too that those people those few people who did have careers, did know something about art, were very accepting of the rest of us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, we weren't blocked from entering into the scene. We were, you know, we would do, as you know, these great extravaganzas at the Vancouver Art Gallery, and everybody was participating.
At an equal level.
Yeah. There was nobody saying, oh, you can't come in and you can come in and, you know, we got to shape a show and, you know, this has got to reflect some kind of theory. It was just all, we all just went in and did it.
There we go.
Well, this video wall, as we called it, I made, I think, for the Electrical Connections show. Well, I worked with Tom Chandel and Bill Fix. And we got together 40 or 50 old television sets.
Where'd you get them?
We went around to television repair stores and asked them if they had any old broken TVs. Because there wasn't really monitors available then. Nobody had them except the television stations. So we made up this huge wall of televisions. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. Some of them had the glass smashed out of them. Some of them had mirrors in them or little scenes inside them. Some of them at the far end, which you can't see here, were smashed up with a sledgehammer on the floor. So it starts out kind of regular and then it collapses. And what we had on the screens of the TV were pre-recorded images that we'd recorded on half-inch black and white Portapacks. Television stations, which are coming through the air, and closed-circuit cameras in the gallery. Right? And this was all kind of collaged onto this video wall. We didn't use switches. We didn't collage it that way. We collaged it quite by accident, because we were trying to hook up all these television sets together, to wire them all together, and we didn't know anything about how to do that. And we didn't know what coax cable was. That shielded cable you need for transferring video. So I remember we just got some brown house wire and, you know, ripped it apart and stuck one end on the TV and stuck one end on the other TV and then went to another one and another one. So the whole back of this thing was a mass of wires, all the wrong kind. And the result of it was that any image coming into the system would kind of jump out of the wires and go into another wire. So it was a whole field of video imagery behind their invisible video imagery that was hopping from television to television. So we would get on a TV, we might have a double exposure of the CBC News as well as a Helen Goodwin performance superimposed on top of it.
Fantastic. You know? What a great
But it was all out of naivety and not knowing how to hook these TVs together. I remember Werner coming back and saying, oh my God, you know.
How did you do that?
You can't do that! But I said, we did it. You know. In fact, that was the first big video installation in Vancouver.
Oh, this is sort of neat. This is like starting with the full dome and then... So, you know,
I do have one thing I remember.
Taking it down.
I have a film, time-lapse film, of one of these domes going up.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it was a commercial I made for the Intermedia Dome Show.
Oh, far out. I'd love to see
so
that.
So it's sort of interesting. It says Intermedia, and Taki did the soundtrack in Japanese.
Intermedia,
and the dome appears. And it's all Hi-Con black and white. I'll look for it.
Fabulous. Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah. That'd be fun to put on a loop or on a DVD. Dome show.
And who's this?
Oh, John
Grayson?
Grayson.
John
but
Grayson.
But there is a John Grayson who's a filmmaker.
Is that him?
It's not him, no.
Oh, it's Grierson?
Grayson. John Grayson is a filmmaker, gay filmmaker, who's quite successful in Canada.
But he's not of the same...
But it's not
the
same guy.
Generation?
No, he's younger, much younger. So this guy was something like John Grayson or John Grierson. And what did he do?
Was he a writer? Is he like a... yeah, he's writing.
What's he doing? He's typing.
He's typing. I think he was a magazine person, like a writer.
I thought he did strange musical instruments.
Oh, really?
That's what he did. Made these strange instruments, you know, with strings and electronic sensors and pickups.
Oh, really? Oh,
I'm pretty sure that was what
he... I don't remember.
And he worked with somebody, some important American musician of that type.
Uh-huh. John Cage?
No. Not that... quite that type, more of a funky type.
And this was where the dancers did dances and stuff, and then, you know, and then they kind of like involved the audience by dragging the surveyor's tape around. Everybody got.
But they moved also in that piece. The dance. Karen did the choreography on that, I think, and they started in the first room, and then you moved to the main room. And et cetera. And the audience, remember, followed the performers?
Oh, through the gallery.
Yeah. The dancers moved through the gallery and the audience followed along behind them.
And so, consequently, they were moving through all the different domes.
Yeah, they were going and interacting in various ways. I remember in my dome, I had a videotape of a dancer. I can't remember what she was doing or he was doing. But it was, and they came and they kind of interacted with that.
So your dome, you had projection on it, right?
Yeah.
You projected from inside it.
I projected from up above, from the ceiling of the gallery.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, how did you set the projector up?
Well, conveniently, there was a skylight up there. It was one of the small rooms in the gallery. And I don't know how we did it. We just took it up and taped it in.
And the skylight didn't go to the outdoors.
Well, you could take the skylight off, I think, to work on the projector.
So
and then put it back again?
There was double roof, though. I mean, like, you had... Yes, I know. There must have been a skylight on the roof.
Yeah, there was a skylight on the roof.
There was a skylight in the ceiling, too, so you could get...
I don't remember one in the ceiling, either.
No.
Just in the roof.
Well, how did you... Did you have this projector outdoors?
No, it was... it was inside. I don't know. Somehow we built a platform up there, and it must have been a mirror.
Uh-huh.
You know, and a tape loop.
It's funny how you think that, you know, you'll remember these things forever, but like 40 years is a long time, eh? 35, 40 years.
Yeah, remember I had foam on the floor. And I remember walking into that dome one morning, I came down to check the film loop, make sure it was working. And there was a tour in the gallery of old age people from an old age rest home. And they were being shown through the dome show. And there was five or six of them laying on the floor of the dome, looking up at what Jerry Gilbert described as the inside of an eyeball. And over the top was coming all these images of clouds and water and various other things.
Great image.
Nice.
Oh, I always liked that, the poets entering the gallery. On their hands and knees.
Yeah, they're coming back here too. There's a few of them.
Down the stairs, and I think they looped all the way down the stairs and up another through another entrance. So this one must have been poetry night and meetings, so people having meetings. But it was all about, like, electronics, eh? Like, oh, no, this was poetry. But poetry, like, with tape recorders and stuff, you know what I mean? Everybody had, like, headphones, and there was a tape recorder here, and you sat there and listened to the poetry, and there's Maxine doing some kind of strange thing in here.
Well, Dennis and I were doing things with these machines, I remember. These were two stereo tape recorders, three-head tape recorders, and we'd patch them all together so they'd start looping and playing. And it was really a primitive kind of sampling, you know, because we'd set up this thing and we could take out images when we wanted from it and turn them up and turn them down. It was very much like what people are doing now with sound and with music.
So what would the sounds have been?
The sounds, we did one piece we did I remember quite clearly, it was a noon hour concert at the Vancouver Art Gallery on Georgia Street. And built a noon hour sound concert, a music concert. So we closed the main doors to the gallery. The people came in from the street into that lobby. And in the lobby, we had hung 6 or 8 microphones from the ceiling. And we kept the audience waiting there for about 20 minutes. So they were talking. And then they finally let, and then meanwhile we were recording these, and we had these machines. I think we had 4 machines with great long quarter-inch tape loops sticking out into the space. And when the people came in, we played a mix of them being outside in the lobby and all the things that they said, and we, you know, echoed it and did all the cheap tricks that you could do in those days with tape recorders and looped it. And that was the performance.
But it worked.
Yeah, it was great. It worked.
Start again?
Okay. I guess it was during the Dome show, as we were saying, a lot of people were invited to come in from the outside, ordinary people in a way. And Helen Goodwin, who was dancer and choreographer, decided that to bring in some strippers. And there was a club down on Main Street, which I can't remember the name of. It was the only club in town that had what were called then go-go dancers.
It wasn't Number 5 Orange.
No.
That was later.
No, that wasn't even a strip club at that time. And she arranged with the club, and she brought the whole club. She brought the patrons and the dancers. So here we have in the Vancouver Art Gallery, people packed in so tight you could hardly move, and go-go dancers gyrating up on a stage. And it was interesting that she got away with this. Like, you couldn't get away with that today. Or you could in a way, because you're contexting it in terms of, you know, you're quoting in a way. But I think if one of us males had tried to do that, we could have gotten into trouble, even at that time.
Uh-huh.
Although feminism was not as strong as it is now, not as accepted. And I think that the women, there was some discomfort with the women at Storm, at Intermedia. Although they were included, there was still, it was dominated by the males to a certain extent. You could just sense it, you know, but women were not as strong as they are now.
Uh-huh,
you know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So they still felt somewhat intimidated by
yes.
the situation. And they weren't really doing things that related to women or to feminist ideas. They weren't critiquing someone, they were just involved, but they weren't critiquing the process the way women might do now,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
same situation.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Well, I wondered about that event, the strippers, and how this, you know, how the strippers had actually gotten, you know, into the gallery. And so that was it. It was Helen's work.
It was Helen's thing, yeah.
Yeah. Sure. And so that with the city feast, there were all these feasts all around town, and everybody came back to the gallery
yeah.
after the feast for like an evening of games of chance and music. And
I remember that you couldn't get into the gallery. There were so many people there that it was all spilling out onto the sidewalk.